I think there's a tremendous power in that. At the same time, there's a terrible challenge in that. And there are definitely moments where I dream of my nice, modern Orthodox neighborhood of Cleveland Heights, Ohio, where the biggest difference I had with my neighbors is I supported Chicago sports teams and they supported Cleveland sports teams.
This Pardes Life is an original podcast production from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, please visit www.elmad.pardes.org, elmad.pardes.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the second episode of This Pardes Life with Zvi Hirschfeld. Zvi teaches Talmud, Halakha, and Jewish thought at Pardes. He's also a faculty member of the Pardes Center for Jewish Educators and has been training and mentoring Jewish educators for over 10 years in tefillah, in educational settings, critical issues in modern thought, and Israel education. He has a BA in history from Columbia University and did graduate work at Harvard University in medieval and modern thought. He studied at Yeshivat Har Etzion and has rabbinic ordination from the Chief Rabbinate of Israel. He was director of Judaica at the JCC of Cleveland and is an instructor at the Cleveland College of Jewish Education for many years. He's a curriculum writer. He's involved in staff training for Nesiyah. And he and his wife and his four children live in Alon Shvut. And today we're going to be dealing with the issue of peoplehood. I just mentioned that you live in Alon Shvut. Zvi, you worked in Cleveland. You grew up in Chicago, you went to Columbia University, you went to Harvard. This is a pretty good CV, and you could have done many, many wonderful things, I'm sure, in the United States of America for general society, for Jewish society. What made you come to Israel?
Well, I think you really hit the point. Life in America, as an observant Jew, was lovely. I had synagogues and schools and kosher food and Shabbat and community. So why did I come? And I came to Israel, and it goes to the heart of my Zionism, because I believe that my Jewish life is far more than my individual religious life or even cultural life, but it's about a vision that to be Jewish is to be part of this people that has a mission as a nation to accomplish in this world. And I believe that we are supposed to try to accomplish that mission primarily living in this land as a political national entity. And that's why I came, and it connects exactly to our theme.
You use the word people. Some people use the word peoplehood. What does that mean to you? It's a perplexing term. I think we often use it, but what does it actually mean?
Well, I think perplexing is being kind. Many of Pardes students sometimes find it racist or exclusionary. What does it mean? Why should it be, if we have this lovely culture and texts and rituals and values, why would we want to limit it only to people born to certain parents? Or why would we want to do Jewish outreach only to people who come from Jewish lineage? What is this idea of having a particular people? What does it have to do with anything that we're talking about? And I think that that's precisely the point, is that that having this be something we are born into, this connection that is automatic between us, I think is teaching us a fundamental lesson about unconditional love and building something with people who are different than we are. And I think that is the magic of what's going on here in this whole idea of what Jewish peoplehood is about. Fundamentally, it is teaching us a lesson precisely that we can love people who are different than we are. The fact that there is this built-in automatic ethnic connection between us means that I am forced to live with the idea that I must build this future with those I disagree with, that the bond I have with them is not based on what I choose, what I agree with, what I like, but it is a built-in connection. And that's how family works as well. That is where we learn to love unconditionally. And by love, I don't mean romantic love or, you know, hearts and flowers or emotions, but a sense of deep personal commitment and connection that goes deeper than anything I'm believing or doing, anything that they're believing or doing. It's unconditional. And the power of that unconditional love, I think, is the most exciting and also the most challenging aspect of this whole concept.
Really? It sounds so nice what you're saying. We have our differences, but this is what unconditional love is about. Think of the Jew who disagrees with you most, who's very, very behavior and beliefs are anathema to you, and compare that to some of the wonderful Gentile people you know in the world, and you really feel more of a connection to the Jewish to that Jewish person?
What do I feel? I think feelings are complicated. I think on an individual level, I could certainly find a non-Jew who I found charming and warm and intelligent and shares a lot of values with me to be a person. I'd much rather spend the afternoon with that person. But that's precisely the challenge. Look, think of my family. I can think of kids that are a lot nicer than my kids. I could go to my kids' school and pick out kids who are more polite, more studious, more well-rounded, and more pleasant to be around. They probably pick up their dirty clothes also, but I have to love my kid. And I think it's the same model. When the love isn't earned, I have to somehow realize that my connection and commitment is rooted in a larger picture, a destiny that I haven't chosen, but I feel a part of. It's the hardest part, but it's also the most powerful part. It's easy to love our kids when they do all the things we want them to do, but I think we'd agree as parents, we feel the depths of our love precisely when we do all those things for our kids when they're driving us nuts. And I think we could say the same thing about Jewish peoplehood as well.
So if it makes you feel any better, none of those kids pick up their laundry. So you don't need to be worried on that score. How is this translated? You said that you made Aliyah, and that's an enormous deal. Since Aliyah, how has your commitment to Jewish peoplehood expressed itself? I mean, you live in a community that's fairly homogenous from a religious viewpoint, maybe even ethnically in terms of educational background. So I'm interested how you express it. I know for us it was very important, for example, to live in a neighborhood which was mixed. So I'm interested in how you express your peoplehood and how, for yourself, you justify living in a comparatively homogenous neighborhood.
First of all, I can't really justify, based on what I just said, in the neighborhood I live in. Although there is certainly diversity in terms of Sephardic and Ashkenazic and diversity in social and economic background where I live, and certainly in the schools that my kids attend, there's a wide range of diversity. At the same time, you're right. I chose a place to live based on where I felt I could acclimate the best. And coming to a country so different from my own, I think I probably made the easy choice, and maybe it wasn't the right choice. But I think my sense of diversity and pluralism is far more expressed, I would say, in my professional life. Teaching at Pardes and the Nisiyah program, I've really only worked, and the JCC, I've only worked in settings where there are diverse groups of Jews with different opinions than my own in terms of educationally and communally. But I accept the challenge. Maybe I'm going to have to move. Maybe I'm going to have to really put my money where my mouth is and accept that challenge and live among Am Yisrael. Although I do, it does seem to me, even in Jerusalem, that many of my religious friends at the end of the day still seem to have other religious friends and go to shul with people who are like them. So I don't know if geography is going to be the answer to this problem, but challenge accepted. I have to think about it more.
You know, they say that it's easy to love Israel. It's Mr. Israel who it's not so easy to love. I think many of the Jewish people are in a very different place to where you are. And I'm interested, if you look not at yourself, but at the Jewish people in general, is there anything anymore that connects us? Do we really think of ourselves as a people?
Look, I think that is the big question we have to grapple with, because I think you're right. The sense of the distance between us, between religious and secular and all the different places in between. Look, this is a pure faith thing for me. I can't say I get up every morning and it's borne out. I will say this, that the state of Israel functions as a living testimony that we can still do it. We are still living in a country and participating in a country with Ashkenazim and Sfaradim and secular and religious and ultra-Orthodox and all these different hues in between, and we still feel this sense, unfortunately, usually when we're attacked, that we share a fate, we share a destiny, and like it or not, we have to build something with one another. I think there's a tremendous power in that. At the same time, there's a terrible challenge in that. And there are definitely moments where I dream of my nice, modern Orthodox neighborhood of Cleveland Heights, Ohio, where the biggest difference I had with my neighbors is I supported Chicago sports teams and they supported Cleveland sports teams.
You speak about Israel, and it's true we get together when things are tough. And yet, both in Israel and especially out of Israel, Israel and what it will look like is one of the most divisive things amongst Jews today. I'm interested if you could expand a little bit on whether Israel in fact joins us or really is doing more to divide Jews than to join us. I think it was different in the 50s. Today is many years later.
It's a terrible irony, right? It used to be God divided us, but peoplehood or the state of Israel connected us. And I think you're right. You go to North America and you have a growing sense that Israel is one of the most divisive issues out there. I don't have an answer for that, really, except to say Israel exists as an entity. The idea of Israel might make us feel passionately and disconnected from each other in some senses. But at the same time, I do think there's a sense the Jews who are so worked up over it, I think they're worked up because they feel connected. You know, as Peter Beinhart said, he doesn't boycott China, even though China's an occupier. He boycotts the West Bank because he feels somehow responsible for what's going on here. So to me, that's the key. Even the Jews who are bothered and we're arguing about it, I think in a way Israel is still that Seder table that we are still sitting at and having our debates and getting very angry with one another and fighting over it. But at least even that fighting, in my mind, reaffirms this idea that this connection is there. Where we are headed, I do not know. But I like to believe that all Jews out there who do feel some sense of national identity can't avoid Israel. Israel is the biggest, most obvious example of Jewish national entity, Jewish national identity that exists. Every Jew that feels that is still somehow going to have to relate to this state and what it means. And maybe with greater participation and greater interest, maybe the fighting will also turn into greater engagement.
We know that amongst many, many younger Jews, including Jews from traditional backgrounds who receive traditional education, defining oneself ethnically is very, very out. And there are many, many people who show great commitment to Judaism who do not feel the same commitment. I often speak to young Jews who really, really are very, very committed to Jewish practice and Jewish life, who say they don't feel a stronger connection to a Jew who lives in Georgia, Georgia, Russia, not Georgia, United States of America, than they might feel to a poor non-Jewish person. I have two questions about this. The first one is, if I was a young, committed Jewish person for whom Israel and Jewish peoplehood was very, very low on my set of priorities, what's the one thing you would say to me?
I would have to make the case that the Jewish people, as a people, have something unique to offer the rest of the world to make the world better. If I can't make that case, then I'm just a racist. Right, if I can't show why an investment in this unique people offers us an opportunity to affect the world with our values, with our ideas, with our passion in a way that we couldn't as individuals, then I can't make that case any more, by the way, than I can make the case that investing in my family. Why am I investing in my family and not distributing my time and effort and energy equally among those who need it most in my community if I didn't believe that somehow by investing in my family, there was something that was going to come out of that that was important, that's bigger than our little tight circle? And I think Jewish people have to make the same claim. If we don't believe it, if we think that Judaism is just our own personal spiritual journey, or we think the Jewish people is only defined by anti-Semitism, then I can't make that case. But if I do believe that somehow our history, our culture, our values, our rituals, our texts have an essential role to play in the overall vision of where humanity is going, then I'm in trouble. But I think I can make that case.
So you are saying that it may be more important to teach people the laws of kosher than to go and work for Oxfam and stop world hunger?
I don't know. I will say that teaching people to accept and invest in their Jewish identity may, in the long run, have a broader, more important impact in the story of humanity than one other person working for Oxfam. But I do believe the Jewish story is a story the world needs, and it won't continue and won't be told unless there are Jews who are passionate about telling it.
Up until now, Tzvi, you've been speaking very, very nicely from a viewpoint of Tzvi Hirschfeld, perhaps even from a Jewish educator's viewpoint. For a moment, I want you to expand your horizons and speak in the name of God. Why do you think God chose to give the Torah to a particular people rather than to the entire world? This is what we're going to be looking at next week, but I'm interested to hear now why you think God didn't give this beautiful work to the whole of humanity, instead to this rather stiff-necked people.
So I call this Plan D. God starts us out in the Garden of Eden, we fail. He then has us outside of the Garden of Eden, the generation of Noah, we fail. He then has us after the flood, we end up building the Tower of Babel, and we fail. Then he turns to Abraham. That's Plan D. And Abraham's mission is told from the beginning, through you, the rest of the world will be blessed. God decides, and I don't know why fully, to deal with a particular person, a particular family, and a particular people. And again, I would answer based on what I said earlier, because that's how we learn about unconditional love. We learn to love unconditionally first and foremost with our nuclear family. We then broaden that out to our wider family. But ultimately, I think our vision, our end of days vision, is we're going to feel that connection with all of humanity. That's what I think Jewish peoplehood must be building towards. But I'm still in Plan D. This particular family, this particular tribe has a mission to work on itself, to develop itself, and to get its values and story and ideals out there. But ultimately, I think the bigger picture, I believe God loves all of humanity, and it's all about the biggest vision for all of humanity.
Thank you, Tzvi, and we look forward to hearing you next week examine the story about Torah study more. The question I'm going to ask you is, this Jewish people of yours, Tzvi, who's included in it? Does it include people who converted in ways that might be different from what your community does? Does it include people who reject their own participation in this community? Does it include people who are technically Jewish according to a Jewish legal viewpoint, but for whom Judaism is not part of its life? Does it include people who actively work against Jewish interests?
So I don't get to decide who's in and who's out. I think that people who, on a certain level, I believe if a person wants out, I'm not going to drag them back in. I don't really believe in that. If you're asking me halachically, so Jewish status we know is about being born to a Jewish mother, and once one converts in, they're in forever. But that's a legal technical definition. I would say in terms of my theological or philosophical definition, everybody who wants in is going to be part of this story. Whether they're going to count in every minyan across the world, that's a halachic question. But in terms of their sense of belonging to this bigger shared purpose, I've got to believe they're included. And how that's going to work itself out, you know, I'm actually not God, even though you asked me to speak in God's name before. We'll have to see. But I do believe they're part of this story.
Thank you, Tzvi. We'll have a chance to expand on this issue, but especially on the previous issue discussed about Torah study, when we next speak to each other.
This Pardes Life is an original podcast production from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, please visit www.elmad.pardes.org, ELMAD.pardes.org.